Hello, and welcome to the podcast. If Magnus Brook ever writes his memoirs, they should be worth reading. He was head of the Director General's office at the BBC between 2003 and 2006, and served both the extremely popular Greg Dyke — you remember he was obliged to resign in the wake of the Hutton report into the circumstances surrounding the death of David Kelly — and also his successor, Sir Mark Thompson, who is now in charge of CNN. Magnus is now Group Director of Strategy, Policy and Regulation at ITV, whose profits have been tumbling due to a drop in advertising revenue. They're down 60%, but whose production side is prospering. And, of course, ITV has just made that extraordinary drama series, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. As ITV's Group Director of Strategy, I wanted to find out from Marcus how important the new media bill now in the Lords is to ITV, and whether or not his company will remain a public service broadcaster in the longer term. Oh, and what he thinks of the industry regulator Ofcom. Here's our conversation. Magnus Brook, welcome to the podcast. The media bill is going through the House of Lords at the moment, about to go into committee. Why does it matter so much, in particular, why does it matter so much to ITV?
Well, thanks, Roger, and it's delightful to be on your podcast. I think it's not just important to ITV, but I'd say it was important to everyone in the UK too, because what we're seeing at the moment is a very rapid revolution, actually, to online consumption of television. So in about 4 years' time or so, we expect about 50% of homes in Britain to be primarily online TV households, reaching about 80% by 2034. And it really is a revolution. And TV online is going to be controlled and shaped by online platforms and software providers, so the Amazons, the Googles, the Samsungs in particular. And I think there are two problems looming with this. The first is that those platforms sell prominence globally. So that's visibility and access to content to the highest bidder, who is unlikely to, I think, to be a PSB in an individual territory. And secondly, I think those gatekeepers, if you like, will extract as much economic value as they can from anyone on their platform. So at the moment, Amazon's standard terms are to require 30% of advertising revenue from anyone they carry. And of course, the UK regime for television dates really back from the 2003 Communications Act, and it really hasn't kept up with how the market's developed. And we think that both of those global trends around internet television, so selling prominence and extracting value, pose a real threat, actually, to PSB in the UK and actually to national...
Can I just break that down for a moment? I mean, just in simpler terms for oldies like me to understand. You will no longer, in the future, you don't really have a direct relationship, if you like, with the audience. You have to go via a platform.
That's right.
That platform, if you're not careful, owned by predominantly Americans, I suspect, can, if at the present moment, essentially say, oh, we're going to change the terms of trade. We actually could charge you more this year, or we're going to, oh, by the way, you're not paying us enough, so we're not going to give them sufficient prominence. I mean, they have immense power, therefore, to control whether and how you reach your audiences. Now, what could a British government, a single government, do about that?
I think that's exactly the problem, Roger. And of course, we've been used to having direct access to people's living rooms through broadcasting, through Freeview, DTT, but also through satellite and to some extent through cable. So this is a very different situation. And what the government can do, I think, is to legislate, as it's proposing to do in the media bill, to ensure that PSBs can retain prominence, which they've had in a linear television world, both in relation to home screens, where you see the app when you switch on your smart television, but also potentially in things like recommendations or search results. So that's the first thing I think the government can do, and it's proposing to do in the media bill. And the second thing, I think, is to give Ofcom a power to resolve disputes between a PSB and a platform to ensure that the terms of access to those platforms don't exploit the PSBs or extract money out of original UK PSB content. So it's important. And this isn't just about the UK, by the way. I mean, I had a meeting the other day with the Australian Communications Minister, and they have exactly the same set of issues in Australia and are legislating quite a similar way.
So there's that question of prominence and making sure that you have this access to your audience. The other thing that seems to be going on is this, and I want to know from you really whether you think this is a relatively temporary phenomenon or not, is the migration of advertising. and the way in which search engines seem to be hoovering up advertising. You yourself, I think, suffered, what, 15% drop in advertising revenue? Is that right? And is that typical over the last year?
It's not typical. I mean, we did last year have a 15% fall in linear advertising, so it's linear broadcast advertising, which is very severe decline in linear revenue. And that's a mix of different things. It's partly about the audience declining in linear, but it's also partly about the macroeconomic environment. And we're not unique in that. I noticed RTL's results this morning. They've had similar sorts of declines. But look, the encouraging thing, I think, in our results that we announced last week is that our digital advertising revenues grew very rapidly. So we had a 21% growth in our digital advertising revenue. So there is a displacement going on here. I mean, as people watch less linear broadcast television, they tend to watch more online streamed content and catch-up content. And the investment we've made in ITVX, but also in things like Planet V, our programmatic advertising platform, are absolutely designed to catch the money that's falling out of linear television, if you like, and direct it into a more targeted, more sophisticated advertising offer on ITVX.
So in the end, looking forward, I mean, you obviously more revenue will come from digital than from linear. It's an argument about when won't actually be a complete changeover. But when you're dealing, therefore, with this advertising, you mentioned earlier, I think, a deal with Amazon, they take 30% of the revenue. Supposing they said to you, actually, we're going to take 40%. What would you do? How would you negotiate with a company like that?
Well, I mean, those are Amazon's standard terms globally. Yeah. And look, we're in the process of trying to process that. But part of our answer to that, I have to say, is the media bill, because it's going to be very important for original content investment and PSB sustainability that, frankly, we don't have to give money to platforms who carry us in the way that we've never done before. Because in the end, it won't be sustainable to have a PSB system that's 30% smaller. We have to make money in order to cross-subsidise the things we do, like regional news. And if we don't make any money, because the platform captures all of the value, then we simply can't afford to pay for PSB.
I remember sitting in the audience with Greg Dyke, who actually you worked for at one stage, but this would be before he became DG of the BBC, and I think he'd just come out of Saving Breakfast Television, as he would see it. And there was a discussion about regulation and what could you do, and you just said very simply, look, if we're not making a profit, you can't regulate us. I mean, you can't force us to lose money. We've got to make a profit, in a sense, before you can regulate. So if ITV doesn't make money, it can't be told to do a range of things which are relatively non-profit making, relatively. I mean, you just can't do it, can you? So this is the sort of vice we're in.
I think that's exactly it. In the end, ITV is a PSB, and it's in our DNA. We've been a PSB for 70 years. But ultimately, we're also a commercial company. We're listed on the stock market, and PSB is a, if you like, it's a deal. We have to do certain things which the market doesn't do. I mean, Netflix, Amazon, and so on don't provide nations and regions news, or indeed national and international news, as far as that goes. So we have to do some things that don't make us money. But in return for that, we get some value that those competitors don't get, and that's prominence. It has been spectrum historically, and it will be potentially some benefits under the media bill. So there's just a trade-off. Are the benefits you get commensurate with the costs that you take on?
But also, to be in a reasonable negotiating position with governments, you've got to be able to say to them, and I think Sir Peter Bazalgette told me this about a year ago, you know, we could in the end cease to be a PSB. We could say, actually, in the end, it's not worth it. Was that a serious possibility, let's say, before this media bill, you know, you could see what this media bill was like, that you at ITV seriously considered no longer being a PSB?
Look, I think, as I say, I think we, in our hearts, in our DNA, we would like to remain PSBs, but that can't be at any price. And therefore, of course, you know, we have a responsibility as a commercial company to make sure that obligations, you know, very substantial obligations that we take on, we can pay for, and that we get the value that we need in order to be able to deliver those obligations. So, yes, of course, we have to consider, before we take on another 10-year obligation as a PSB, we absolutely have to consider what the alternatives are, and are they as attractive as remaining as a PSB?
Now, sticking with the media bill, some people, and I have to say I am particularly concerned about that part of the media bill which ceases to specify the sort of public service broadcasting content by genre that you need to provide. So instead of specifying the arts or science or religion and ethics, there are words that give you a rather more freedom. And also parts of that bill allow, and certainly the BBC as well, to put some programming on digital which will not be on broadcast. Why did you want that additional freedom? Why wouldn't you want things like religion and ethics or science specified in the bill?
Well, I'd like to sort of get rid of this myth if I could. I mean, we haven't pushed for that. So we didn't push for changes to the description of the remit.
Yeah, but are you do you welcome the fact that the specific descriptions are not in the bill?
I genuinely don't think we feel strongly either way. We have a pretty clear idea of what it is that ITV delivers as a PSB. So nations and regions news, international news. We invest more in UK content than any of the other commercial broadcasters, spend more outside London. So we're clear what our role is, and we're very clear that we'll carry on delivering that as a PSB. But no PSB can deliver everything. I mean, Channel 4 and 5 don't deliver nations and regions news, but there may be things they deliver that we can't. So it's about the system as a whole. So if there are obligations on the system as a whole, provided people are clear about what ITV can and can't deliver, I think we're relatively relaxed about what the overall systemic requirement is, provided that not every single broadcaster has to deliver every single bit of PSB. That's simply unsustainable.
So if the Commons eventually, when the bill goes back to it, does specify areas that need to be covered, you wouldn't be absolutely opposed by that, but you just say to people, be realistic in the application of that, given the advertising market and our financial position.
Yes, I mean, I think provided it didn't change the formulation that we've had historically, which is it's about the delivery of the system as a whole, because clearly, I mean, the BBC with £3 billion of public money is in a stronger position to deliver some of those genres of content than ITV, given all the other things we're doing. And it's a question of prioritisation. What is it you want from PSB and how are you going to pay for it, particularly from commercial PSB? Because, look, one of the things we've done as a society, actually, is we've always prioritised, since the beginning of TV, we've always prioritised competition and choice. So ever since ITV was introduced in the 1950s, actually what we've systematically done is introduce more and more competition in the TV market, whether that's multi-channel or Channel 4, effectively, then multi-channel and Channel 5. And now we've got a hyper-competitive market of online television. And there's lots and lots that's great about that in terms of choice, in terms of the number of different sorts of content, the world view, efficiency amongst the broadcasters. So there are lots to praise in that. But one of the things that has done is undermine some of the monopoly economics that help pay for this incredibly varied, rich PSB diet. I mean, Michael Grade, who's now...
Because there's going to be a market failure.
Correct. You know,
and it was only one of the reasons you talked about PSB, but it was the case that where there's clearly identifiable a market failure and there's clearly a public interest, then some sort of intervention is worthwhile. And what we've now seen in terms of international drama and elsewhere is no market failure at all. You've got fabulous international drama. But Mr. Bates and the Post Office and so on, things like that, you know, which nobody would have thought be a big international hit, though you're selling it abroad. You know, how do you ensure those sorts of things are made?
Yeah, and so the interesting thing about Mr. Bates, of course, is that that wasn't the result of an obligation or a quota. There's no quota on ITV for crusading, campaigning drama. We did that because it was the right thing to do. We thought it would be an important contribution to the national debate in Britain, but also be entertaining in a sort of slightly horrific way, but that actually it would be very engaging to the audience and make a difference. And that's back to the point about ITV's DNA as a PSB. I genuinely think that does come out of ITV's history, heritage, and we've got a long history of these sorts of campaigning dramas.
But even so, you couldn't fully fund it, could you? I mean, it's quite interesting. I mean, what the budget, I understand, was around about 8 million. What was ITV itself able to put up for, what, 3 hours
of
broadcast?
It's probably not right for me to go into the details of the numbers, but we had to assume a substantial contribution from international distribution, effectively, because, I mean, we paid the biggest tariff we could pay as the broadcasting business. We don't pay a higher tariff than we paid for Mr. Bates. And even then, actually, quite a lot of the talent worked at really very low fees because they thought it was genuinely important. So we absolutely, on a totally exceptional basis, we pressed all the buttons we could. But that is the reality of funding drama now. You can't fund dramas on television now just out of the receipts of broadcasting. You have to effectively have secondary revenue from international distribution and potentially from a production fee in order to be able to fund drama. And that does create pressure on dramas that are very UK specific. I mean, I don't know whether we'll recoup in international distribution what we paid out on Mr. Bates. We may not ultimately. There are people picking it up, and there is a sort of little guy versus the state narrative, I think, which works well in quite a lot of countries. We may not recoup all of that money. Having said that, Mr. Bates is exceptional because on the broadcasting side, we've had 14 million people on average per episode watching it. So it's been a great success from an advertising point
of view. Which is absolutely staggering, the figures. But just to push you once more, if I said you put half the money up yourselves for Mr. Bates, would that be broadly accurate?
Well, no, because we are also distributing it. So we've effectively taken all the risk on Mr. Bates because we both commissioned it, we made it, and we took the secondary distribution risk on it as well. And look, it's also part of a portfolio of drama, so there are other dramas which are not as groundbreaking but, you know, highly entertaining and very popular, where we'll make more money and there's lower risk on those dramas. And so it is about a portfolio overall, and because the main channel, ITV main channel, indeed ITVX, is a portfolio of lots of different things, like a supermarket. You can't just sell one or two things in a supermarket, you've got to have the whole portfolio.
Now, just going back to where we were talking about public service broadcasting and also, you know, acknowledging the fact that you worked for the, where you were head of the DG's office at the BBC under both Greg Dyke and Mark Thompson. We're coming up to the question of the renewal of the charter of the BBC. It had to be there by 2027. Nothing, I presume, will happen until after the election. But the concentration will almost certainly be on the licence fee and things like that. Do you think we need a much wider discussion? In other words, the first part of the discussion should not be about the licence fee or the BBC. What it should be is a wide-ranging discussion of what we want from, as a community, as a country, from public service broadcasting. What's the best way of providing it, and the BBC's position within that, and then how it should be paid for. In other words, do we want to make it a wider than a BBC discussion before we get down to the details of the charter?
I mean, I work in PSB policy, so it's always interesting to have a debate about what PSB should be delivering. But I think that probably we should focus particularly on the BBC. And there are some questions around how is the BBC funded going forwards, which are perfectly legitimate questions to look at. And we have got a unique moment, I think, with the expiry of both the licence fee and the charter at the same time. That's not always been the case, but those two things do align. And there clearly is going to be a debate around that. But I think, look, one thing that's fairly clear is that we have benefited enormously as a society from having a mixed ecology. So a mixture of advertising funded PSB, subscription form of Sky particularly, but others now, obviously, but also a well-funded, publicly funded broadcaster in the BBC. And that does enable you to deliver, as you said before, more market failure content, because in the end, it doesn't matter if the BBC doesn't make money. It doesn't matter if they don't get a big audience for certain genres of content, if as a society we think it's important they should provide it. But there's a perfectly legitimate debate, I think, about, you know, what is the appropriate means of publicly funding the BBC? Is it the licence fee, or are there other ways that are more equitable or more efficiently collected? And I think that is the right debate to have.
But before we get to that debate, I'm thinking, for example, of regional and local journalism, which you have such a proud record. You obviously inevitably do less than you did 20, 30 years ago, but have a significant record. But I was struck by a column that William Hague wrote in The Times this week, I think, about how worried he was about the threat to local democracy, or actually not just local democracy, by the reduction in local journalism. Who is watching, you know, the councillors who are, you know, taking money for bribery, for planning commissions, etc., etc., etc. Do you think would you welcome, if you like, a relatively quick review into what public service broadcasters as a whole can offer in this area and its relation to the more traditional media before we get on to an argument about the licence fee, after which there'll be an argument about what proportion of the BBC licence fee should go on local radio or whatever it is, or local media? In other words, before we get to those specifics, more widely, society ought to look at local journalism and say, what can we collectively do? And perhaps the BBC is the prime deliverer, but not the only one. But have that focus and debate first.
I wouldn't disagree that it's really important that we make sure that we have a strong nations and regions journalistic culture and resource. I mean, there's no, there can't be anybody who would disagree with that, I think. And there's no doubt that there's been real pressure on the local and regional newspapers over the last 20 years or so, as their business models have come under enormous strain as a result of the rise of the online platforms. But look, I mean, to reassure you from an ITV point of view, I'd argue that our nations and regions delivery is still incredibly strong. I mean, we reached about 13.5 million people with our nations and regions news each month in 2023. We spend nearly £80 million or so each year. We have about 400 journalists. We have a political correspondent for every English region. We have a political team in each nation. We continue to run news trainee schemes. We've invested a lot of money in bringing regional news to ITVX. You can now access every single regional news programme and de-aggregated bits of the programme via ITVX. I mean, I was brought up in Yorkshire and I can go and look at Calendar if I want to, yes, sitting in London. So I think there's an awful lot to praise in what we're doing in Nations and Regions News.
And can you be reasonably sure you can sustain this over the next 4 or 5 years?
Well, look, I mean, we're, I think, on the cusp of accepting new 10-year PSB licences. But look, what we do know is that in the next 10 years will be a lot more eventful and challenging in an online television era than the previous 10 years have been. Over the last 10 years, we've made no requests for changes at all. But as we look forward over the next 10 years, I mean, there are certain things here, like the media bill. I mean, the media bill gives enormous discretion to Ofcom. How Ofcom exercises its discretion in terms of the definition of prominence or the way in which it settles disputes with platforms, as we were talking about earlier, will determine whether we have a viable PSB system going forwards. I mean, there's an awful lot of responsibility being put on the shoulders of Ofcom to ensure that this new regime in the media bill for online era is going to enable PSB, commercial PSB in particular, to continue to be able to pay for the delivery of its remit.
Well, I wonder how strong you think the shoulders of Ofcom are. I mean, you've seen the argument this week by two former members of Ofcom, Professor Stuart Purvis and Chris Bernatvala. They're disturbed, as many as are, looking forward to the election that's coming up. We assume not in May, but hold on, October, November, probably this year, and how organisations such as GB News and so on will approach it and the problems that creates. And there's a real confusion. Now, whether you think, you know, their interpretation of the law or not is, or their rules are correct, would you accept that on the question of impartiality, there's a lack of clarity running up to the election about what will be required of people who are involved in, if you like to say, opinionated journalism, i.e. GB News in particular?
Well, look, to reassure you, there's certainly not a lack of clarity at ITV. We're extremely clear what our responsibilities are and what we will do.
Yeah, but are you playing by a different set of rules than GB News are playing by? You all thought you're on the same playing field, and there was a bit more freedom for GB News, but there was a clear playing field. Do you think there is a clear playing field on the question of impartiality?
Look, I've got some sympathy for Ofcom in a sense here, because what we welcome more competition. I mean, people who want to launch these sorts of services ought to be given, I think, a certain margin of discretion, certainly in the early years of those services, because it's really hard and it's really expensive. And we've seen the amount of money that GB News is losing. And it is, there is something here about plurality. But that said,
Although only polarity in a certain direction, well, which is right of centre. But never mind, continue. Yeah.
But where I would agree with you is that I think Parliament thinks that it set up a regime in which news services in particular have to have due accuracy and due impartiality across the board. And I think that there is just a question opening up about the extent to which the discretions here that are being exercised are potentially still quite the right ones. Or to put it another way, whether there is a level playing field, and, you know, because there's another way of doing this. The other way of doing it...
There isn't a level playing field in the sense that you are operating in a different way from GB News. I mean, and can you conceive of a situation where in the run-up to the election, where the rules of impartiality are even tighter, can you conceive of Conservative MPs continuing to present shows on GB News, let alone interviewing politicians?
Well, I can certainly tell you that won't be happening on ITV, but
what would you feel about it happening on GB News? Because at the moment, It seems to be a possibility.
In the end, I think that is ultimately a question for Ofcom. And if Parliament isn't happy with where Ofcom gets to on that journey of determining those questions, then it's a matter ultimately for Parliament to say we need to change the rules and make them stricter. And so I'm not sure it's for ITV to we will do the right thing, we'll do what we know we should do and what we would always have done, and I think it's for others then to have a debate around GB News and what they should or shouldn't do.
A wonderfully diplomatic answer, Magnus. I know why you're in your job. But finally, I want to ask you an impossible question. But when you look at which is the future in 10 years' time, now, obviously, you can't be sure of that. But what can you give us a couple of scenarios about where we will be, do you think, and where ITV will be in 10 years' time? What are the possibilities? Maybe you should say 5 years. 10 years is too difficult. What are the possibilities?
Well, look, I think the elephant in the room is around online, the development of online television and the role of platforms in that world in helping to support or potentially undermine public service broadcasting. And that really, I think, is the big question. I think there are a host of other questions. I think from an ITV point of view, by the way, I mean, what we are ultimately good at is storytelling. So effectively commissioning and making the best British content. And I think the audience figures speak for themselves. That's something we're really good at. And we think there's a big market and demand for that. So all things being equal, actually, we should flourish in this world as we have done in the world before. I think the big question is whether, as it were, global economics and asymmetric economics, if you like, between global players and national players, mean that in the end it's harder for national players to get that content in front of audiences and to be able to monetize it. And that's where I think the media bill and potentially subsequent media bills, I mean, remember, it was only I think 7 years between the 1996 Broadcasting Act and the 2003 Communications Act. 7 years takes you to 2031. Now, you've heard it here first, but it's not impossible that we have another media bill in the early 2030s, not least because there's obviously going to be a debate in the latter part of this decade around the future of DTT and whether we might move to an all IP distribution world at some point.
Sorry, briefly tell you what those two things are, DTT and IP.
So DTT, so Freeview, so the future of the Freeview platform in the long term versus online delivery of television. And there's going to be a big national debate, I think, around that at some point in the later 2020s, because it's very expensive to maintain two distribution infrastructures, and there'll be fewer and fewer people using Freeview by the 2030s, and it will be very, very expensive to continue to service 98.5% of the population.
And yet, at heart of public service broadcasting or media, as we said, is universal access. And we know at the moment, if you made the switch straight over to digital, a significant part of the population would not have access, and they would tend to be the poorer part of the population. So that is always going to be a drag, isn't it, on if governments don't find ways of getting universal access, sooner or later the economics will say we've got to make the change, and this small but significant part of the population are going to be left behind if we're not careful. Now, you can't solve that. Governments have got to solve that, haven't they?
You put your finger on exactly the problem. And this is not a problem for tomorrow. There's nobody sensible suggesting this is something for any time much before 2034. But in a sense, working back from that, I think you're right that there's still probably a percentage of the population, probably slightly older, potentially slightly less advantaged, that may still be very reliant on traditional means of receiving television, particularly DTT, so Freeview at that point. And there is a big question for government about what are we going to do. And this, by the way, it's not just about television. It's about all sorts of other forms of inclusion around access to the NHS, to all sorts of digital services that are going online. And you can see this in other parts of the economy. You can see it around the debate that's been around physical ticket offices in train stations, or indeed around universal service for the Royal Mail, another issue that Ofcom are wrestling with. So I think this is all of a piece, which is about how do you make sure that everybody can continue to benefit from full participation in national life through online means in the long term. So you're absolutely right.
Magnus Brook, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Magnus Brook. By the way, this week we're back to publishing our podcast in the week we record it. Thank you very much for all those who signed up to Patreon to support us on a regular basis. As you know, we don't have any advertising revenue, and we'd like to keep it that way. If you're reluctant to commit to a regular contribution, please consider making a one-off donation on our crowdfunding page. You can find the link to this in the description of this programme. But remember, if you do sign up to Patreon, you will also receive a weekly blog, which gives my take on the week's interview. And that's it for this week. This podcast is presented by me, Roger Bolton, and it's produced by Kate Dixon. The sound is by Dave Kitto, and special thanks to Quinn Genty. It's a Good Egg production. Until next time, goodbye.